That's Highland Park, Michigan's Park Frederick Adams III. But nobody ever called him that, because we all knew him as Pepper Adams. To jazz fans, that's his name. On baritone sax, opening up on Charlie Mingus's opus, Haitian Fight Song. It's from his 1964 album, Pepper Adams Plays Charles Mingus. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trace Lead. It is Tuesday, December the 16th. And they scored a victory of sorts yesterday. Excuse me. A county judge sentenced the Reverend Edward Pinckney, for decades an undisputed thorn in the side of a political corporate conspiracy, to empty the small, almost all-black, poverty-stricken town of Benton Harbor, Michigan, and hand it over to Whirlpool Corporation. He got a 2.5 to 10-year sentence on 5 felony counts of forging signatures on petitions to recall the openly pro-Whirlpool local mayor, James Hightower. Pinckney's trial was an all-white affair, including all jurors, the prosecutor, and even the judge, and not a shred of evidence at trial linked him to altering any petitions. But prosecutor Michael Sipek repeatedly advised jurors, without correction from Judge Sterling Schrock, that evidence was not necessary to convict. Pinckney, 66 years old, was remanded immediately to prison. He's appealing the sentence. He had told Lead Stories on November the 5th, just hours before the jury convicted him, that he was hoping for the best, but prepared for the worst. Either way, he said, he'll be fighting to the end. We're joined today by Abayomi Azikiwe. He should be a familiar voice to you. He's editor-in-chief of Pan-African Newswire and has been our correspondent on Detroit's bankruptcy, and he has also been covering the battle for Benton Harbor and Pinckney's sham trial. Today we'll be talking about Reverend Pinckney's long history of activism, why he was targeted, and the significance of the link between Detroit, Benton Harbor, and several other cities and towns in Michigan that account for more than half of the state's black population being under emergency management. Abayomi, once again, a delight to have you with us today. I'm not hearing him. Are you there?
Hello, can you hear me? Yes, can you hear me now?
Okay. I'm glad to hear you. I'm glad that you can join us today. Let's get the mood started. I want to play a clip of Reverend Pinckney talking to a group exactly a month ago in Detroit. The group is Moratorium Now. This is a group, again, you should recognize that name. That's the group that has been seeking to put an end to moratoriums, to closing foreclosures and water shutoffs in Detroit. And he was there to basically give them an update on where things stood with him. Here he is giving the local group an idea of what was going on.
How do we let so few control so many?
That's right. Say that.
We sit around here and think that everything is going to be all right.
No way.
It's not going to be all right unless you make it all right. If you can't make it all right, it won't be all right. And see, and here's the thing. It's not really about you.
That's right.
See, this is what we get confused. We think it's all about us. It ain't about us.
Amen.
You know? It's about the future.
That's right.
And that's what they're trying to control.
Yeah.
That's right. And that is the spirit of Reverend Pinckney. It has not waned at all. Abayomi, you covered the trial. Could you give us, you could start with the sentencing and then we'll kind of move backward. Tell us about the day of the sentencing.
Well, yesterday I was in the courtroom in St. Joseph, Michigan. It was an ominous atmosphere that existed. The courtroom was filled with supporters of Reverend Pinckney. At the same time, you had armed deputy sheriffs, two of whom were stationed at the entrance for the court observers. There was another one over on the left side of the room where the judge was, just a few feet away from him. Then there was the bailiff, of course, who remained standing as well during the whole proceedings. There were two unidentified white men who were sitting next to the prosecutor. I don't know who they were. I presume they were from the Department of Corrections, but I never was sure. They never introduced themselves, and they were never introduced. The hearing lasted for over 2 hours. I was surprised because there were several motions by the defense lawyer, Tad Parrish. He had raised several issues that had largely been swept under the rug during the course of the trial in terms of why Pinckney was charged with a felony. These allegations about changing dates on a recall petition, at what point does this rise to the level of a felony? And as you mentioned, there was no direct evidence that he changed the dates. In fact, some of the witnesses said that it was someone else who changed the dates, but this person was never subpoenaed to come and testify during the trial. So they were specifically after Reverend Edward Pinckney and his organization for the sole purpose of shutting them down as outspoken critics of corporate rule and racism in Berrien County.
Reverend Pinckney, who is this man, and why is it that for decades there has been this concentrated effort to sideline him? What is the problem with Reverend Pinckney?
The Whirlpool Corporation and their allies in Berrien County have an agenda, and their agenda is to force as many of the African-American people out of the county and to have a situation where it would be conducive to corporate investment. In 2003, there was a rebellion in Benton Harbor. It stemmed directly from police brutality. They had chased an African-American motorcyclist to his death, and people rose up for several days in rebellion. Out of that came the efforts of Reverend Pinckney that, you know, started to get statewide coverage and even national coverage. And he was doing court watching. He was monitoring what Whirlpool Corporation was doing. He was opposing the massive foreclosures and evictions. He was advocating for jobs for poor and working people in Benton Harbor. And this is clearly in contravention to the aims and objectives of the powers that be in that county. So in 2006, he was indicted because he was involved in a recall campaign trying to remove two city commissioners who had opposed a plan that many felt would bring jobs to Benton Harbor. The first trial ended in a hung jury. They reinstated the charges. They had an all-white jury. And, of course, the situation developed where he was convicted and sentenced to 1 year house arrest on a tether and then 4 years, additional years of probation. Then he published a letter in a newspaper in Chicago where he quoted the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy. And the judge, one of the judges there, apparently they had been monitoring his writings on the Internet, said he felt it was a threat to him and his family. So he was ordered to be put in custody from 3 to 10 years, supposedly for threatening the life of a judge. Well, this drew a national outrage, and the case was appealed. The Michigan ACLU led the appeal, and the conviction was overturned. And also his sentence was commuted to time served. He still had to serve some time on parole, but on probation. But he was discharged several years ago. But he has continued to be an outspoken critic of what is going on in Benton Harbor. So they want to dispose of him. They want to dispose of his organization. They want to clear out the African-American population in Benton Harbor. And they have agents who they've selected to cooperate in this whole process. And the mayor there was targeted because many felt he was not committed to creating jobs and economic opportunities for the survival of the African-American community in Benton Harbor. And enough signatures were collected to call a recall election. But the powers that be stepped in. They criminalized Reverend Pinckney. They were able to, through various machinations, even using the state appeals court, to kill the recall election. So these are some of the developments that have occurred over the last several years. And Pinckney now is in detention. He was taken into custody immediately after the proceedings were over yesterday, and it was completely unnecessary. He could have been given time to turn himself in. His defense lawyer asked for probation, and the judge, interestingly enough, had supervised his probation in the previous conviction, and he said there was no problem. Well, if there was no problem, then why wasn't he granted probation again? So it clearly shows the judicial bias, the overall racism that exists in Berrien County, and people are committed to fighting to appeal this case and also to have Pinckney released as soon as possible.
Could you give us an idea of what Benton Harbor is? We talked with Reverend Pinckney and he described Benton Harbor, but could you give us a bit of context and describe Benton Harbor? What is this town about?
Well, it was a working-class town. It's right on Lake Michigan. It attracted a lot of African-Americans during the early decades of the 20th century through the so-called Great Migration. And there were industrial jobs there that employed people. When we had the restructuring of the U.S. capitalist system, and in fact the world capitalist system, beginning strongly during the mid-1970s, it had a tremendous impact not only on Benton Harbor, but on Detroit, Flint, Grand Rapids, Pontiac, Muskegon. The entire state of Michigan has been devastated as a result of this restructuring, where many of the manufacturing jobs were phased out, plants were closed, they were moved to other areas of the United States and offshore. And there has not been any reinvestment by the corporations, by the financial institutions, and by the various levels of government into rebuilding these cities on some semblance of a sustainable level. So the situation in Benton Harbor is really a microcosm of what is going on in Michigan and around the country. You have a low-wage economy right now in the United States, despite the figures that the government issues every month, indicating that unemployment is below 6%, I believe 5.8%. What they're not telling people, and sometimes they do tell them, but you have to read deeper into the articles, is that the labor participation rate in the United States is the lowest that it's been in over 40 years. So what is happening is that people have dropped out of the workforce, and as a result of that, they're no longer pursuing employment. And that is why you have unemployment rates that appear to be going down. And if you look at the salaries of people and the overall social wealth, they have declined tremendously over the last several decades. So Benton Harbor really is a stark reminder of where this overall economy is going.
Well, Benton Harbor was a thriving town, as you said, on the lake. But when we talked with Reverend Pinckney, he mentioned that it is now 94% African-American, 90% poor, meaning 90% of the people there are living at or below the poverty rate, and unemployment is between 70 or 75%. And that is an extraordinary collection of statistics to describe any town. But at the same time, Benton Harbor is of strategic value. And could you talk about what is the strategic value of Benton Harbor, particularly as it pertains to Whirlpool Corporation?
Yes, it's right on the lake. And what they're doing, they're gentrifying the lakefront area by refurbishing homes, building new homes. But these homes are priced far out of the range of the poor and working African-American population. They've also set up what they call Harbor Shores Development, which has taken over a public park, Jean-Claude Park, which in fact was deeded by one of the wealthier previous residents of Benton Harbor for the people of that city. And they've essentially privatized it and put a Jack Nicklaus signature golf course there. In fact, in 2012, the PGA senior tournaments were held there, and they were held again earlier this year. They've also set up some tourist attractions in St. Joseph's, which is right across the bridge from Benton Harbor. St. Joseph's is where the seat of county government is located. That's where the Berrien County Courthouse is situated. And it is a majority white town that has a far higher per capita income than the city of Benton Harbor. So what they're doing is setting it up as a tourist attraction, a place where people can come and play golf, and where large golfing events will be held. And they perceive this as a mechanism of revitalizing the economy in the area. The Whirlpool Corporation hires very few people right now in Benton Harbor. They've diversified their economic interests. They're still headquartered there, but they employ very, very few people. So the situation there is very, very, very bleak. And Reverend Pinckney was attempting to organize people, to mobilize people. In fact, he had enough support to create the conditions where the mayor was going to have to face a recall election. He, in all likelihood, would have lost that election. And this would have damaged their plans for Benton Harbor. So that's what's really underlying this. And it was quite interesting that the it was an all-white jury that tried him in this most recent case. There was no material evidence even suggesting that he changed the dates on those petitions. None of the prosecution witnesses testified that he they saw him change the dates on the petitions. They had a handwriting expert from the state police. He said he could not identify who had changed the dates on the petition. And even when people came forward and they said they knew who it was, they did not pursue them because that was not their agenda. Their agenda was to prosecute him and take him out of Benton Harbor. He was given 2.5 to 10 years prison sentence. And it was quite obvious from the judge's comments and the overall atmosphere in the court yesterday that this was a decision that was made largely in the interest of the top echelons of the corporate structures in Berrien County and throughout Southwest Michigan, because there was no need, first of all, for this prosecution to take place, for the trial to take place. And there was definitely no need for him to be sent to prison other than a desire to remove him from the area.
Well, he was threatened before with a life sentence the last time. They said that the prosecutor was even considering asking the court to impose a life sentence.
Yes, he didn't do that. He asked for 42 months. Pinckney has gotten a tremendous amount of support from people in Detroit, people in Michigan, people from around the country. The courtroom was packed yesterday. They had to stop allowing people to come in. There were people in the hall outside of the courtroom. So no one was there advocating that he be imprisoned. So the only people advocating for that, of course, was the prosecutor. And the judge was clearly committed to that. They even asked for a postponement of the sentencing based on some of the existing legal issues that were unresolved as a result of the trial in terms of, you know, characterizing these alleged crimes as felonies, based upon other legal cases that have been litigated in the state of Michigan. But he said from the outset that he was going to sentence him yesterday, and that's what he proceeded to do. So the situation right now is to move forward with his appeal to try to get him out of prison on an appeal bond, and to also further expose the racism in Berrien County and how it is linked to the overall anti-racist struggle that's going on right now in the United States, with the demonstrations in New York, in Boston, in Chicago, in Detroit, in Los Angeles, in the Bay Area, all across the United States since August. People have been coming out in the thousands in opposition to police violence. But it's not just the violence of the police on the street. It's the role of the grand juries. It's the role of the county prosecutors. It's also the role of the court systems that protect the violence of the police, that uphold the institutionalized racism in the capitalist system. So the struggle has to broaden to look at what is actually taking place beyond the brutality on the street. If you can survive the matchstick, the chokehold, and the police bullets, will you get justice from a grand jury? Will you get justice from a prosecutor and a judge? And it appears right now that this country is moving full speed backwards in regard to a total eradication of any form of due process or equality before the law as far as African Americans are concerned. We see it repeatedly, not only in Michigan, but all across the United States.
I was told that during the trial, and you were there covering it, that during the course of the trial, attorneys for Whirlpool were in the courtroom observing. What was that?
Well, I'm not sure if they were. You know, I didn't observe any. I didn't know if any were identified. That could have been the case. If it is the case, then that's quite stunning that they would be there, because that would have a chilling effect on even the judge himself. And you got a feeling even yesterday that there were some coercive mechanisms in place outside the courtroom involving this whole situation. Degree of law enforcement presence in the courtroom, the facial expressions of the judge, his almost apologetic comments prior to the sentencing, and the fact that they backed off this idea that he is a repeat offender, and therefore the it's really not new, they've been in effect now for nearly two decades, congressional mandated sentencing guidelines were not necessarily acknowledged. So they withdrew their initial claim that they were going to, in fact, seek a life sentence because he has had several other felony convictions. But most of those other felony convictions are related to his political activities in Berrien County. So the former prosecution of him was politically motivated, and this one was politically motivated as well. So the prosecutor asked for 42 months. The judge gave him 30 to 120 months. So it's obvious that the public pressure had some impact. And there were over 130 letters that had been written to the judge requesting leniency or the setting aside of the conviction, and those were largely ignored or minimized by Judge Schrock. But the public pressure is going to continue, and people around the country already are discussing this travesty of justice in Michigan.
I want to talk about the mayor. This recall election, what became of it? What came of it?
Well, they squashed it. What happened was that after they criminalized Reverend Pinckney, they set out to try to make a case that he had deliberately forged signatures on the recall petitions. He was visited by SWAT teams and from a multi-jurisdictional law enforcement unit. He wasn't at home. He was out of town at the time. When he came back, he turned himself in and he was indicted. On that basis, the county clerk attempted to halt the election. There was a court challenge to that, and another judge in Barron County actually reinstated the recall election, saying that they had enough valid signatures to go ahead with the election. The powers that be weren't satisfied with that, so they went to the state appeals court and found, apparently, some favorable judicial forces who overturned the county court's decision to go ahead with the election. So the elections were never held. So Hightower is still in power, but the general elections are scheduled to take place next year.
And we should note that James Hightower is an African-American.
Yes, he is. He is African-American, and they have repeatedly done this by hiring African-Americans to do the bidding of the corporate community. We've seen it in Detroit, and we see it in other cities across the state of Michigan and indeed across the country.
I want to take a little break here, and when we come back, Abayomi, I want us to connect what is going on in Benton Harbor with what you have been covering for 18 months, and that is Detroit. We'll come back right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Utrice Lead. Our guest today is Abayomi Azikiwe. He is a very familiar voice to us. He has been covering the bankruptcy process in Detroit for more than 18 months now, and also following this case of the Reverend Edward Pinckney, an activist for more than three decades in Benton Harbor, Michigan, who was sentenced yesterday to 2.5 to 10 years in prison for allegedly, they said that he changed some dates or some names on a recall petitions, and there was no proof at all in the trial, in the course of the trial, but the prosecutor had reminded the jury anyway that they did not have to have evidence in order to convict. Abayomi, this city of Benton Harbor in many ways has a parallel story in what is going on in Detroit. You've been covering Detroit now for 18 months. The bankruptcy process has been going on. What do you see as the parallels here?
Well, they're both majority African-American cities. They both have undergone extreme corporate restructuring. The most recent here in the city of Detroit was the imposition of emergency management and bankruptcy. And it was the largest municipal bankruptcy in United States history. And they utilized that bankruptcy to essentially discharge the powers that be in the city of Detroit of their obligations to tens of thousands of pensioners. When they say they have eliminated $7 billion in debt, if you look at what they actually eliminated, and that was their obligations to retirees. So in effect, they appropriated approximately $7 billion in health care benefits and pension obligations. They've also taken at least control of Belle Isle, one of the largest public parks in the United States. They have taken over the public lighting system, which is still in shambles. There was a huge power outage 2 weeks ago that shut down the major governmental office buildings and the number one university in the city for an entire day. And they have also, at this time, they're seeking to privatize the water system. They regionalized it. Now, instead of being the Detroit Water and Sewage Department, it's now the Great Lakes Regional Water Authority. Even though they say ostensibly Detroit still owns the water system, they have brought in suburban interests to, in fact, manage the water system. And there's still tens of thousands of people who are living in the city without water resources. Someone called me this morning and said that, their lights and heating were turned off by DTE Energy. This is a multi-billion dollar energy firm. What is going on is a similar situation to what's happening in Benton Harbor. They're systematically attempting to drive more African Americans out of the city of Detroit. They're building the city from downtown north, and they're having a difficult time in doing it because of the enormous social problems that exist in the city, and also the fact that the overall system is in crisis itself. It really doesn't have the capital to invest the necessary funds to carry out what they intend to do, and that is a massive gentrification program for the core area of the city of Detroit. So there's still a lot of, if you go downtown, despite what you read in Detroit News and Free Press, there's still, most of the buildings down there are still vacant. The office space is still vacant. Many of the buildings are open, and they don't have the resources to put businesses into those buildings. They're doing some residential work there where they're moving people into these apartments. But a lot of the people who are moving in are employees of Dan Gilbert and some of his subsidiary firms, and their rents are actually being subsidized by the corporation. And they're doing this to drive out senior citizens and other people who have lived in downtown for decades. So this is what they're attempting to do. They're building a light rail up the major thoroughfare, only up to about 3 miles from downtown. That is a multi-million dollar project, but it's not clear exactly who's going to ride that rail line because people here don't have a culture of public transportation. They have a bus system here. They ripped up the streetcars in 1956. So this is something that they're experimenting with, but in all likelihood, it will not be successful because still, you know, there's a lot of automotive production that still goes on here, and people are still wedded to and in love with their automobiles. So it's going to require a whole different urban cultural shift, which I don't think is probable, possible, or even sustainable in its infancy as we see it now.
Well, Benton Harbor, Detroit, Flint, Grand Rapids, many other cities in Michigan. In fact, Michigan leads the nation in the number of cities that are under emergency management, and more than half of the African-American population of the state is actually under emergency management. Was Benton Harbor, in fact, a test case or the template for Detroit?
Yes, it was. And even though technically it's been discharged from emergency management, just like Detroit was discharged last week, there still is a state oversight board that monitors the affairs of these urban areas in the state of Michigan. Yeah, Michigan is clearly a Jim Crow state today in 2014. If you look at the courts, if you look at how the city governments, their affairs have been systematically interfered with, the imposition of corporate functionaries to ostensibly manage these urban areas, which they know nothing about, and that's why the services have deteriorated here in Detroit over the last 20 months since an emergency manager had been appointed, even though he's gone now. They claim $177 million just in consultancy fees since March of 2013. Now, they claim, Dugan claims, who is in the mayor's office, he says that they reduced it by $25 million through some mediation process prior to the exiting of bankruptcy. But that's still an enormous amount of money to be turned over to consultants who didn't do anything to improve the conditions in the city. The bus services are worse than they've ever been in the history of the city of Detroit. The streets, the conditions of the streets and the roads are worse than they've ever been. The public lighting, even though they've been installing these lights, are insufficient. And there's still huge swaths of the city that remain dark. There's also a huge problem with street crime, interpersonal violence due to the overall desperation of people in the city of Detroit, and also the emergency medical technician response time is still very poor. So it's, and the schools are in abysmal condition. So incentives to encourage whites or people who have upper income levels to move back in the city are far inadequate, and that's why the city is going to continue to lose population. It's not going to be revitalized until they do something to assist the majority of the population who are suffering from unemployment, from poverty, and from low-wage employment. The type of jobs that are being created in the United States now are jobs that pay minimum wage, some even pay less than minimum wage. There are very few benefits, if any benefits. They're channeling all the medical needs of people into the Affordable Care Act, which is not affordable. So that's why you have fast food workers, Walmart workers, linking up with anti-racist demonstrators who have been shutting down malls, shutting down highways, going into these corporate businesses and making their operations difficult, because there is no future for young people, middle-aged people, or senior citizens if the system continues to deteriorate the way it has been over the last several years.
In a way, all of this is supposed to be instruction for other cities, but you don't get the sense that people are really paying attention to Detroit, or they're paying attention to Benton Harbor, or what's going on in Grand Rapids. And yet it is spreading. It's a contagion. We have other cities that are targeted where masses of people are going to be removed from wherever they're living now. You look at Harlem, for example, in New York. People in Harlem are just now beginning to complain about the fact that it is not what it used to be. They can't afford to live there anymore.
No,
there's massive displacement. What is it that these cities, and especially Detroit, because Detroit was such a huge part of the national and international consciousness, not only for automobile production, but also culture. And it was a decidedly black-identified culture.
Right.
What is happening, in your view, in, when we look at all these things and you see the common thread of massive removal? The civil rights lawyer Hugh Buck Davis, I just read a quote from him. He said, "The thrust is to physically remove and destroy families through the use of the criminal justice system. Every person they can put in jail, every person whose voting rights they can revoke with a felony conviction, every person they can cause to lose their job by putting them on probation, every person they can cause to lose the ability to pay for basic necessities through imposing ruinous court costs and probation is all part of the process. In the 1960s, it was called Negro removal. In year, it was called ethnic cleansing. It could be called genocide, the removal of the minority population for the purpose of redevelopment of the land. That's what's happening in Benton Harbor, and the foremost leader of the resistance, he said, was Reverend Edward Pinckney. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do agree. That is the agenda that's going on across the country right now. And people need to pay attention. They better pay attention because otherwise a lot of people are going to be displaced and a lot of more people are going to be angry and there's going to be even more destruction than what we've seen over the last 4 months. I think what we've seen over the last 4 months is a glimpse of the massive discontent that is boiling right now across the United States involving African Americans, but other forces, other social forces as well. And I believe also that the recent budget that was passed by the United States Congress, and there was very little attention paid to this in regard to the details of it. There was some discussion about whether the government would close down or whether it would stay open. But some key aspects of those that budget are going to be devastating for the majority of working people in this country. For example, they passed a pension reform as a part of that package, which will now attack pensions in the industrial sectors of the labor force. They got the mechanism in place right now. The labor unions were split over the issue. Some were against it. Some favored it on the grounds that if they didn't take these cuts right now, that their pension funds could go insolvent. So this is a national problem that the pensions are being stole from the workers. Now, these pensions that were attacked in the recent budget involve what they call multi-employer pensions, where if you're working in the same industry, for example, in steel or in automotive, then if you move from working from one company to another, you can still keep your same pension. There's going to be limitations on that right now. So people stand to lose even more money in their retirement years. And this sets the stage for an assault on Social Security, which they already have a scheme for reducing Social Security as well. So people need to wake up to these issues. Young people should be concerned because what real future are they going to have if there's only low-wage employment available right now with no benefits and Social Security, if it begins to be eviscerated, and people who work in industry, even though they make a lot less money than they did 2 decades ago or 3 decades ago, if they don't have solid pensions, you shudder to think the conditions are going to prevail among an aging population in the years and the decades to come. Poverty is increasing inside the United States, and it's going to increase even more if people don't stand up and fight austerity.
In fact, that's one of the good things that I saw coming out in the last couple of months and certainly in the last couple of weeks in the aftermath of the grand jury decisions in Ferguson and in New York City. We're seeing the evidence of people understanding that it is not a black issue. These are not black issues. And so they are responding. They're beginning to respond. I look at the pictures and I see the faces and I see that for the first time, I would say in decades, we are seeing a development of a consciousness that this is a shared fate, that people have a vested interest in how this these issues turn out. What is your view on this?
Yeah, I agree. I think people are going to have to do that because it is so blatant at this point with the killing of Eric Garner that was videotaped, and yet a grand jury could say there was no probable cause for filing criminal charges. And you have a Justice Department under the Obama administration, which is fond of saying that they are conducting investigations into some of these incidents, but no one is ever indicted. No one has been indicted by the federal government in Ferguson. We'll see if anyone is indicted in Staten Island. In Cleveland, where Tamir Rice was killed, a 12-year-old child playing in a public park, Eric Holder went there last week, and he didn't announce an investigation. He didn't announce an indictment. He announced a consent decree, an agreement between the city of Cleveland and the Justice Department to institute reforms in the police department. Well, those reforms are not going to bring back Tamir Rice. They're not going to bring justice to his family, and they're not going to prevent additional police killings. Right here in Detroit, we had a consent judgment and two consent decrees that were enforced for 11 years, ostensibly supervised by the Justice Department and a federally appointed monitor who was came from a private entity. And police brutality continued. 7-year-old Ayanna Stanley Jones, who was killed by the police in a botched raid in 2010, 4.5 years ago. The killer of Ayanna Jones is still out. He's still receiving a paycheck from the city of Detroit every 2 weeks. And the two trials have resulted in mistrials. And they're debating now whether to try him again on misdemeanor charges because the felony charges, even though they were inadequate, have been discharged. So, yes, people are going to have to wake up and they're going to have to take action, but they're going to have to get organized as well. It's not enough to, you know, have these demonstrations as laudable and heroic as they appear, but they have to also address the criminal justice system as a whole. The grand jury system is going to have to be addressed. The role of the county prosecutors will have to be addressed, and the role of the courts and the prison industrial complex. It's all part of the same system. If you look at the incarceration rates of African Americans in the United States are 10 times as great as those of whites. In fact, I was reading an article just earlier this week that indicated that the incarceration rates of African Americans far exceed the rates that were in existence during the apartheid system in South Africa. So in many ways, the system here is more subtle, but it's more insidious, and it has to be tackled. And no black president or black attorney general or congressional black caucus members or black mayors have been able to solve the problem. But what's great about what's happened over the last few months is that they have not been able to calm the outrage, both violent as well as nonviolent, that is brewing, you know, in black communities and broader communities throughout the United States. Obama urges calm, and people continue to protest, to block traffic, to block highways, to shut down shopping malls. So this shows the disconnect between the administration, the African-American community, and growing segments of the broader communities here in this country.
Well, the struggle continues in Benton Harbor, and the people who have been following the initiatives undertaken by Reverend Pinckney there have vowed to continue. What is the state of affairs in Detroit?
Well, the situation in Detroit is that this coming year, 2015, we're facing anywhere between 62,000 and 150,000 tax foreclosures. This is going to be devastating. It's going to hamper the so-called plan of adjustment that was agreed upon by the bankers, the corporate lawyers, and their agents in government here in the state of Michigan in an effort to exit the bankruptcy. So I think that with these tax foreclosures, where is the revenue going to come from to run the city? So they're going to have to impose even more austerity. And with Dugan as the mayor, you know, he's an outsider, and no matter, you know, how they try to project him in the media, he really doesn't know the city, and he really is quite concerned, I feel, in regard to the overall mood in the city. I mean, it could shift rapidly, not only against him, but against the whole regime that's being instituted right now. Even one of the most arch-racist conservative columnists in the Detroit News wrote an article on Sunday asking, you know, where are the black people? And he pointed out that now you go in areas in downtown, in restaurants, and you see no black faces. So he said, you know, people should be concerned about this because racial tensions are rising all over the United States. And African Americans are still a majority here in the city of Detroit. And they still are in a position to inflict political consequences, you know, against the ruling elites here in the city of Detroit. The police department here has been heavily downsized, and the new recruits are making something like $15 an hour. So I don't know how committed they are or would be if there was an outbreak similar to what happened in Ferguson or what happened here in 1967, how inclined they would be to defend public property and state institutions. So they're concerned that this plan of adjustment is unsustainable and unworkable, like we have been saying. And they, in fact, they have a meeting later this week with the retirees who may need additional assistance from the state because the pension cuts are going to begin on March the 1st. And people will see what their pension payments will be, despite what was put on paper in the courts. You know, when you actually get that check and you see how it's been reduced, then the real impact of it will take effect.
I want to thank you, Abayomi, for being with us today and for giving us an understanding of what's happening in Benton Harbor and seeing the link. Again, this is all about people making the links with what's happening right in their own communities, because some aspect of it is happening in your community. So thank you so much. We'll, of course, be, continue to follow what's going on in Detroit and in Benton Harbor.
Yes, and people here are very much in solidarity with all the demonstrations around the country.
Thank you so much again for being with us today.
Thank you.
Well, a good way to wrap up this program is to return to Reverend Edward Pinckney. And here he is again, basically telling folks what it is they have to do. But as we wrap up, I want to thank you so much for the pleasure and privilege of your company. I hope this program was informative. Let me know at leadstories@gmail.com or leadstories. You can write me at leadstories on Facebook, Lead Stories with Utrice Lead. So here's Reverend Pinckney. And we'll see each other tomorrow.
It's time that we move this thing to a different level. And whatever it takes to get the job done, we need to do it. We don't need to sit here and wait for somebody to, wait till something happens. Wait till something happens in Ferguson, Missouri. We need to be on our feet right now, challenging these people, saying no more. We are at enough. Enough is enough. Can you hear me? We got to take this thing to a whole different level.
Yeah. Come on.
Right. Anytime that you take a stand, they will attempt to crush you.
Yeah.
You see, anytime that you have a system that will not feed, clothe, and house it people, it must be. It's got to be overturned.
That's right.
So we can do these things. This is an attack on democracy.
That's right.
That's what it is. It's all over the country. And the bad part about it, we are not fighting this fight.
That's right.
That's the shame. shameful part of this. Shameful. You know, we are the busiest people there is in the world. Every time you talk to the people, they always got something to do. Oh, I got to go over here now. I got to go do this now. And right now, they're putting the rope around your neck. You don't even know they got the rope around your neck. And they're pulling that rope. It's time that we change. But here I'm going to close real fast, and I'm going to tell everybody that we got work to do.
That's right.
Yep. Work that we can do. We can accomplish this if we learn to work together. There's no big eyes and little you. We're all in this together. And if we learn to fight together, we'll win together. See, winning is not everything.
Come on.
It's the only thing. That's what we need to do. That's right. That's right. Winning is not everything. It is the only thing. And we have to learn to do that. When we learn to do that, we can take this thing to a whole different level. So I'm going to leave y'all with this. Let's say this together. Enough.
Enough.